Are you tired of the pussification of the American male who's too afraid to defend themselves, saying shit like, violence shouldn't exist? Alright, buddy, say it to that asshole. Death to America! Shut the fuck up. Morning. So I like it. I believe that men should enjoy the finer things in life, like badass women and great coffee.
Like straight whiskey.
America. Pew. A lot of people have opinions about what it's like to be a police officer, but they've never walked the thin blue line. 5-0 down, though.
Oh my god, why didn't he arrest you?
Because we didn't break the fucking law. If you're a guy that thinks a female that lifts weights looks manly, well...
Obviously, we've been approached by a lot of different companies and, you know, like advertisers or whatever. We never wanted to sell out because we wanted to do it for a product that we believe in. And that,
absolutely.
Like, you know,
that we
and,
use.
Yeah, that we use.
That we believe in. And that speaks to us. And
that
our
product
listeners.
Is Black Rifle Coffee Company.
Fuck yeah, it is.
I drink AR-15 French roast. It's called that because that's the, you know, we use to shoot French people. That's why it's a roast.
Yeah, you
they're
roast
they're explosive rounds. But no, it's like the only coffee company, like I said, that's tactical. It's owned by operators. It's drank by operators. Like if you see some sort of hipster vag drinking this coffee, pull down his pants and suck the coffee out of his dick. Because it's not for him, and very little in this world is.
You know, if you're out there and maybe you're thinking, gee, I would love to drink this coffee, but I'm not an operator. I weigh 340 pounds. My knees are shot. I sweat getting the mail. Well, don't worry. Drinking this coffee makes you an operator. It's magical in that way. You can buy this thing, and then you can be that person. It's a miracle, really.
Yeah, but like if you drink this coffee and disrespect people in law enforcement or in the uniform, like spit it out immediately. If I see you doing it, I'm going to pull down my pants and show you my hairy ass. Because that's what I think of you. Hipsters.
Don't make me suck the coffee out of your dick, okay? Don't please. Make me do it.
Black Rifle Coffee Company. BRCC. Lock and load. Brendan, are we recording?
Yeah.
Oh, awesome. It's the only coffee company that has a blog on their website that has like a troll and commenting policy. No, I swear to God, the blogs, like the rants from the owners of the company are fucking amazing. Like these people, like it's like a Little Carmine. They write like Little Carmine talks. Like he's like, we find ourselves in a vicarious position, gentlemen. All right, I'm gonna read now from the. This is from their actual blog on Black Rifle Coffee Company, and I just want you to imagine Decker reading this. Decker reading this to President Davison, because it's like it. This is better than that. As God-fearing Americans, we have put ourselves in a vicarious position. We have allowed a precedence to be set, one that suggests laws written by our forefathers and elected officials are not worth the paper they are written on. What is next? The communist states of America? I know that is far-fetched. The example that has been set from the top down these past 8 years clearly depicts an image that is nothing short of scary. To elect Hillary Clinton would be rewarding her efforts to strip integrity and democracy from the constitution of the greatest nation on the planet. She will continue the apologetic demeanor and degradation of national security that will inevitably open the doors to the savages that want to see the United States fall. Use code name BileRat to get 20% off AR-15 blend. We're here with Noah Coleman. Tech editor of Vice News.
Hey.
If he was tech editor of Vice, it would just be like, I took mushrooms and played Final Fantasy for 40 hours.
Did you get to do any cool shit like that for your job?
No comment.
Okay.
I don't want to expose agents in the field.
We're here to talk tech, But before we get there, I want to talk our tech, because we're now at Chapo Mark II. This is our first episode with our new professional audio setup. So you may hear in this new quality of audio that I, in fact, don't sound anything like Ben Shapiro. I have a full, deep, manly voice. And that, like, you know, our heavy breathing will just sound all the more like we're lying next to you.
Yeah, I'm not, because I'm not, like, leaning into the mic to be heard, I'm more relaxed. More racial slurs may just slip out because I'm in my easy chair and I go, ooh, you know what I call Turkish people? I call them half Arabs.
And no matter what happens, I know that you will all keep telling me that my audio sucks because you're in a massive program of gaslighting that I do not fucking appreciate.
No, like I said, I want to talk about Silicon Valley, the culture and ideology of Silicon Valley, with someone who knows what they're talking about. But first, I need to ask you, Noah, I think what I think is the most important question related to this topic, and that is, what is up with Elizabeth Holmes' voice?
Yeah,
it's got to be a put on, right?
People don't even know that they have a basic human right to be able to get access to information about themselves and their own bodies that can change their lives.
I honestly have no idea. Her whole personality, her like public affect, it's like I don't get it.
Where did she get the surgery to get the anime eyes?
I'm not sure. I think it's all natural.
Ghost in the blood centrifuge. You know what I like about Elizabeth Holmes? She sounds like Lauren Lavoie.
You know why broadcasts don't come with erasers? Because you can't change what's in your hemoglobin.
No, Noah. I mean, like, we should get the audio edited in. But there's this clip from her going on Mad Money. This is like when the scandal sort of was.
Yeah, this is when she first went on to like defend her honor.
And I think she chose Mad Money because she was like, well, Jim Cramer's a friend or something. Or
Jim, like, because everyone looks like 100 times saner, like next to Jim Cramer. Okay. Like if she went on like on PBS, you know, you would like. I'm not so sure it would have gotten the same reception, but yeah, you know, she looked normal comparatively.
Yeah, Jim Cramer's got his fucking sleeves like rolled off to half his shoulders. He's got coke drip. Just fucking violently rubbing his nose, and he's like, "What? Tell me about the blood test." And she's like, "Well, people are jealous."
No, she's going on there to like defend herself and the company. But I swear to God, like there is like a couple seconds about halfway through the interview where she drops the weird like dad voice that she does.
We put on our website that we do venous testing. So blood draws from the arm the traditional way. And starting in 2015, we announced, and it was published in San Francisco paper, in Fortune. I talked about it in an interview I did with Forbes, that we made a decision to...
Nick said her voice sounds like a kid calling their teacher, pretending to be their dad to get out of going to school.
Accurate. Accurate.
Or she's like, well, obviously we're a company that has, you know, more strict testing than anything.
But, you know, honestly, from time, like, it's really odd. It's like she drops it for a second, but...
Yeah, she sounds like Buffalo Jill.
Jim Cramer, is she a great big fat person?
What are you, about a type O negative?
Actually, no, this is a good... I want to ask you, like, can you give to our listeners, like, the executive summary of the amazing Theranos catastrophe and scandal?
Yeah, so, like, the story goes back, like, a decade, so...
She's been working on this for a long time.
Yeah, so Elizabeth Holmes, most normal people, boring people, when you go to college, you go to your freshman classes, you go to your math class, your gender class, your second gender class, your third gender class, and then...
Bathroom
But Elizabeth
class.
Holmes, she realized very quickly that she was meant for more. And so she went and she linked up with a chemical engineering professor, something like that. And
this is all at Stanford, right?
Yeah, she's at Stanford, and she comes up with like this big idea, and her big idea is, what if we could do blood testing cheaper and with no needles? And she, like, I don't know whether it's true or if it's part of the mythology, but, like, somehow, like, she has a fear of needles, gets worked in at some point along the way. But so she's, like, 19, she's like 19 years old. And in, like, classic Silicon Valley fashion, she's like, there is this incredibly well-regulated, like, industry that involves the health and livelihoods of millions of people in this country, and I could totally do it better. And, like, I may have, like, the chemistry expertise of, like, what you would expect a 19-year-old to have, but by God, I'm going to make this work. And so she launches Theranos, and so she is able to raise money from, and this is kind of interesting, she went around and raised money from a group of investors, none of whom were, like, considered, like, one of which is, like, a well-known investor, DFJ, Draper Fisher Jurvetson, and, like, they're a well-known investor mainly from, like, the last dot-com bubble, but, like, everyone else, it was, like, Larry Ellison's personal venture fund, it was, like, kind of a weird group, but whatever, she raises the money, and over a number of years, like, she raises progressively larger rounds that set the company's value ultimately at $9 billion. That means that on paper, Elizabeth Holmes was worth, like, $4.5 billion. So the line that you kept hearing over all these years was that Elizabeth Holmes is the world's youngest self-made female billionaire. Which, like, you know, like, she leaned the fuck in. She's on the conference circuit. Everyone loves her startup, except nobody knows what Theranos' technology actually does. They, like, Theranos, like, she's, like, very vague about all of it. And they signed a partnership deal with Walgreens, and they get, like, blood testing centers in Walgreens in Arizona. Like, she worked out some deal with those regulators. The Cleveland Clinic, you know, a prestigious medical institution, like, links up with them in some capacity. And ultimately, like, last October, a Wall Street Journal reporter, an actual, like, journalist, Pulitzer Prize-winning guy named John Carreiro, shout out, real boss, he...
The God.
Yeah, exactly. He drops this huge story that's, like, basically, Theranos' technology has struggled. It's not, like, really clear if it works. Their chief, like, researcher, scientist guy committed suicide. It's possible that it was tied...
Are you using scare quotes around
committed
suicide?
Like, no, there is no... Like, it's... The reporting that's come out of it suggests that, like, a lot of it had to do with, like, the pressure he was under at work, which was to make this thing work that couldn't work. And so you get this portrait of Elizabeth Holmes that comes out, and it suggests that she's just, like, the master operator. It's fascinating. And so over a series of successive stories from the Wall Street Journal, it just becomes clear that, like, Theranos is, like, it's kind of, well, it looks like its technology doesn't work. And well, so this $9 billion thing was, like, a total, like,
the portrait
scam.
That emerged in the Vanity Fair article that came out last week, which was incredible, was one of the most, that it was, like, maybe Theranos was the most audacious con in American history.
Well, it's wild because now you have, there's an FBI investigation, there's another DOJ criminal investigation, there's an SEC investigation.
And what's interesting, like, the detail that sprung out to me in that article is when it talked about how she was getting the Defense Department involved in all of this. And there was going to be some huge contract for the Defense Department. And Mad Dog Mattis, a recurring character on Chompo, shows up as well.
So there's an interesting tie-in here. I would like to name some members of the Theranos board right now. We have, number one, Alpha Dog Henry Kissinger.
Boo, woo,
number
woo.
Two, former Secretary of State George P. Schultz. And lastly, former Republican Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist, who, by the way,
he was the guy who diagnosed Terry Schiavo on the video.
Yeah. And so Bill Frist.
And diagnosed dissected cats as a child.
And by the way, I believe he was the only person with a medical degree. He is a doctor, Bill Frist, MD. He was actually the only doctor on their board.
So now, she wasn't able to get, like, Reinhard Heydrich? I mean, he wouldn't return her calls?
Kurt Schlichter.
I mean, she picked all these board members because
ghouls.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. She picked all these, like, people close to, like, the U.S. government, and in part, like, a lot of the reporting that's come out suggests that these kinds of people helped her avoid the kind of scrutiny that she otherwise would have gotten. Like, for example, she had some contact with the military, and they looked at using Theranos' technology, and they were like, no, and they notified the FDA or something, and, like, an actual, like, regulatory authority, who then looked into it, and then, Holmes was able to, like, contact somebody she knew, either through, like, on her board or somebody else she knew, to, like, help make that go away. So in a lot of ways, it's like having these people on her board enabled her to perpetuate this thing for, like, almost a decade.
And one of the most amazing details in the Vanity Fair article is when they talk about how she hooked up with Mad Dog Mattis, and then, like, the people in the army had a chance to look into the Theranos technology, right? And they discovered very quickly that not only could it not work because the technology didn't work, or like the just it wasn't there, it couldn't work because it violated the laws of physics. it was not just technologically wrong, but conceptually impossible.
Well, see, that's always been a hang-up for our military. Like, human rights laws are, like, no problem, but physics, it's, like, physics, laws of physics.
Exactly.
Are...
There are people in the military at the end of the day who do care about physics.
They care about the law, and the law of physics is laws of physics
that's
are really
what's so
important.
Baffling to me about this is because most of the big financial scams over time are basically just boils down to financial black boxes. You know, you say, you invest some money with me, you'll get X number, and because they're doing a pyramid scheme or something, it works. And people have no way of knowing, so all they see is the returns, and so they're like, cool.
What's great about like Theranos in some ways, and it's kind of instructive to your point, is how Theranos, the excuse that Holmes and others used in defense of the company is, look, like, you look at LabCorp, look at Quest Diagnostics. Those places, like, they have a huge lobby. They are, like, the status quo. They, like, do not want our... Like, we cannot let our competitive secrets
out of
the
bag. They're the establishment.
Exactly.
They do not want our secrets that have... that have shown how the laws of physics no longer apply.
I guarantee you, if Theranos hadn't lost all credibility, like, further into the 2016 election, Holmes would have found a way to, like, rhetorically align herself with Bernie Sanders. I'm 100% serious.
I think I actually wish I could go back in time and work for Miss Holmes, because I have the way to do it. Fuck this, like, you know, status quo, blah, blah, blah. It's the Breakfast Club. And you're like, I have, you know, we came in here, a killer, Mad Dog Mattis, Jock, Bill Frist, the Brain, Henry Kissinger, and Princess Elizabeth Holmes.
And we came out revolutionizing the way we take blood.
The Blood Club.
Wait, but, like, how did the fucking fact that it's impossible never stop anyone?
I mean, it's, like, this is, like, Silicon Valley at various times. I mean, so I want to, like, on some level draw, like, a slight bit of a distinction between, like, what Theranos does and the rest of the Valley. Like, Theranos, in a lot of ways, is pursuing something that, like, isn't your conventional Silicon Valley project. Like, your average tech company in Silicon Valley, it's, like, a bunch of people who stare at computers and, like, will never go near a piece of hardware, will never go near a piece of, like, medicine. It's, like, not, like, what they do.
Never
it's
go near another human being.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's hoodies up, like, locked in, like, yeah. You got it.
Call the police the moment you see a homeless person.
And so... Where I think Elizabeth Holmes, like, was able to kind of succeed, like the reason that nobody just, like, called bullshit was because they were doing a thing that a lot of people didn't understand. They were able to find a group of investors who maybe were not that scrutinizing. And additionally, like, everyone, like think, like, the story. Like, it's like, really, when you think about it, it's, like, an astonishing feat of marketing. Like, she mapped out perfectly. Yeah. She, like, made sure she was on every major conference circuit. She made sure that, like, you know, she was, like, included in every list of, like, important young, like, women in industry. Like, she totally, especially in recent years, as, like, I feel like the level of discourse, especially in Silicon Valley, about, like, the underrepresentation of women and people of color has it's dramatically increased, or it's become much more high profile.
No, I was after I read the Vanity Fair piece, I went back and I looked at Elizabeth Holmes' Twitter timeline, and I was just scrolling through it over the past year, and she didn't tweet much, but what she did tweet would be like, today is the anniversary of Rosa Parks, like, refusing to stand up on a, you know, on a bus, like, and then it was like, you know, hashtag women power, like, stuff like that.
No, she, I mean, okay, you want to know the ultimate, like, Elizabeth Holmes hashtag women power move? In March of this year, or, like, I mean, I wrote the story, but she hosted fundraisers for Hillary Clinton.
Excellent. Well, you said, like, you know,
she appeared with there's a photo of her with Chelsea, but, like, this is in this year. The first journal story happened last October. There had been many reports, like, much more detail, but all of the sketchy stuff going on there in between then, and she hosted an event. I remember I wrote the story this past March, but yeah, she's, like, at the Theranos, like, headquarters.
Well, you talk about, like, a triumph of marketing and kind of self branding and promotion. I mean, to me, my favorite thing about her is that she just started dressing like Steve Jobs and talking about him all the time and wearing, like, a black turtleneck. And I think she really managed to convince a lot of people that she was the next Steve Jobs.
I mean, it's like, but that just shows you how skin deep, like, people in Silicon Valley, and the Silicon Valley press, like, tend to look at these kinds of people. Like, that they really, like, legitimately, if somebody gets, like, the valuation of their startup high enough, and they begin to wear a black turtleneck, and they go on TV enough, and they repeat, like, the same, like meaningless platitudes, that, like, yeah, they're Steve Jobs.
And that's where that story that got woven in at some point about how, well, she didn't like needles as a child, so she wanted to eliminate needles. It's like, oh, all of our iPhones don't have buttons on them because Steve Jobs didn't like buttons. And, yeah, like, those stories are supposed to inspire us, like, this person wanted to reshape the world in their image. But that, to me, is kind of terrifying, that, like, a handful of these assholes in Silicon Valley can just, like, you know what, I don't like cabbage.
Yeah, but, like, the
I
difference
don't like
is
Chinese people. I don't.
I didn't like people with
I didn't, a certain degree of melanin in their skin.
I didn't like Chinese people.
I've got
as a
an
kid.
App for that now.
Yeah. I didn't like broccoli, so I just got rid of it. I just invented a predatory seed. I didn't like immigrants. I didn't like gay people. That was like, that's how they could have resold the Hitler story.
I don't like food.
I mean, let's be
the
clear.
Adolf Hitler story is like, growing up, he's like looking at Jews and he's like, there's got to be a better way. Like, someone has to fucking do something. And it's like Hitler in a black turtleneck at like the Munich Ideas Festival in 1937.
He's holding up a pellet of Zyklon B.
Yeah. And he's like, oh, no. What if one molecule could change the world?
We've already outdid the last episode. 20 minutes. It took us a half an hour to get to Hitler.
Real quick, baby.
But no, Hitler. But you know, pivoting off that, like, Noah. Like, Silicon Valley has become such the name, the location, it represents so much. It's like become a metaphor. It's become a stand-in for so much like in American culture and capitalism. So like what do we mean when people say like refer to Silicon Valley?
Well, that's a very good question. I think, I mean, to my mind, like, the thing that people kind of, when they say and they refer to it, is like they're referring to like the software and partly hardware industry centered, like, that originated in like the South Bay of like the South San Francisco Bay Area, and then has come to encompass San Francisco as well. But like software in particular, I mean, like Facebook, Google, like Apple makes software too, but like, you know, like the iPhone and like Apple's obviously like if not like a part of Silicon Valley, the center, but like fundamentally, like, all of like this rapid quote unquote disruption and all that other like kind of claptrap is largely like it's drawn to like recent advances in the last 10 years in software and just like how quickly, I mean, frankly, how much it can save in labor costs. Like, fundamentally, that's what it is.
Like how much information and data is now worth, because I also read, again, in that Vanity Fair article, a statistic that sort of blew my mind. It said Silicon Valley has generated more wealth in the last like decade or something than anything else in human history.
I mean, I remember that line. I mean, it's Vanity Fair, so I guess it got by a fact checker, so
okay,
I guess,
well,
it's true.
Okay.
I mean, like, well, crossing fingers there, but I mean, what's definitely true,
well,
is, like,
I used to actually be a fact checker in the Condé Nast empire, so chances are it's probably bullshit.
Well, I will say, like, the iPhone is the single biggest profit engine of like a single product ever. Like, it's fundamentally like Apple, it made Apple into the most single valuable public company in the world. The Saudis, by the way, are still the most, with Aramco, their oil.
Hell yeah, bitch.
Yeah. But they got the number one spot, including public and private. But like, it's, I think with like, take Apple and the iPhone, for example, like, the iPhone, more than anything, I mean, it's created so much wealth, and a lot of which is just cash that's sitting
in Ireland or whatever.
Yeah, like, I mean, yeah. Apple like isn't spending it. Like, I encourage anybody listening to this to go to Yahoo Finance and look at how much cash on hand Apple has, and think about, you know, how many people that could feed.
excuse me, it's a disruption fund, okay?
Yeah.
Rainy day disruption fund.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is what I sort of want to say. Like, okay, it's a place. It refers to, like you said, this model of kind of like information capitalism, but it's also an ideology that's gotten bigger than the sort of products or apps or information itself, and like the ideology of kind of disruption and newness. So like, how would you describe that?
I think like so one dude, Evgeny Morozov, had like kind of a cute way of describing it, which is like solutionism, which is that Silicon Valley is constantly fumbling toward finding solutions for problems that don't exist, which is sort of true. But like, I think what's a little bit more like on the nose is that Silicon Valley is like rapidly automating and making more efficient processes like everywhere in your life. Like, it's all the way from like, you know, like a really boring big data company whose job is to like process information incredibly quickly for large kinds of industries, like, or for like hospitals or like gorillas in the Congo or whatever. Or you have like on the other end of it, you have like Soylent, which is like literally making more efficient your day-to-day life and making it so you don't have to eat or really drink even. And so that you can like have like a whole meal because you just, you can't be bothered to like go and make yourself food or buy it.
Soylent's protein to carb ratio is fucking pathetic, though. I just want to say that. Fucking abysmal.
Well, that's what makes it so amazing to me, because I think that one of the reasons that Theranos did so well for so long is because even if you had explained to people, you know, it's actually impossible to do that, they would have been like, yeah, okay. But I think a lot of them in their heart of hearts in Silicon Valley really believe that they are not bound by laws of physics.
I mean, but
they think that
at-
if enough brain power is put to these questions, they can transcend what we think of as like reality. Peter Thiel has called mortality an ideological concept.
I mean, but I think that like the way to look at it is that like Silicon Valley, more than anything, it's like this perfect model of capitalism, because if you look at the way that they think about these problems, it's like, well, how do you measure success? It's not by whether it accomplishes like some like meaningful goal. It's that like, is this wildly profitable? And so like or it's like wildly successful. I mean, I think like the best example of like the kind of like rejoinder to what you're saying is like, look at Elon Musk. Like, this guy, like, everybody thought like, you want to launch rockets and you want to like build these electric cars or whatever. Like, that's crazy. Nobody can do that. And like all the short sellers on Wall Street like bet against him like 8 years ago. And somehow he made it out of that. Like he figured out like how to do it.
Didn't his rocket just blow up though?
I mean, yeah, I mean, but
and that electric car had
I'm not coming on Chapo Trap House to defend the sanctity of Elon Musk's name. But what I do want to say is that like, there are specific times when you see something succeed like that, that does break the rules, that it gives inspiration to all these like code jockeys or whatever. And they're just like, oh, like, yeah, this is exactly like, of course that makes sense. And so then it gives them like that's how like they get into like, you get these really dorm roomy conversations that will lead to startups about like, well, what if we could have a Bitcoin powered self-driving car that you can rent out to other people, which is a real thing I read about today.
I'm going to create a toilet that analyzes your stool and takes Venmo.
You joke, but like
smart pipe. Yeah.
Yeah. This is like a thing.
Well,
I'm going to take a fleshlight that texts through the temperature of your shaft what kind of mood you're in.
Horty.
Don't you remember like Vessel?
Vessel, no, yeah.
The smart cup.
That? Oh, God, the smart cup.
It was a smart cup, and it
told
like,
you what you were drinking.
Yeah.
It was a cup that told you what you had just poured into it.
It's like you take a sip and it's like bleach, and it's like, oh fuck, god damn it, yo, thank god that reminded me.
Yeah, if fucking Hamlet's dad had smart cup.
Like, oh, then there was that I don't know what has happened to it, but there was that Kickstarter for that ring that was like supposed to allow you to like virtually like sign into your computer and like stuff. Like, you were supposed to, like, just use your hand gestures to, like, power all of your devices, and it just never fucking happened. But people just thousands
of
dollars.
Yeah, I will say my
thing.
One bit of advice to anybody listening to this is, like, generally don't back things on Kickstarter.
No, Patreon.
Patreon. Patreon.
Yeah. Give your money to Grey Wolf. but, like, it's... No, seriously, it's just, like... One of the things that I feel like Silicon Valley has done, though, is that because it is like one part of, it's probably the only part of our economy. It's the most like it has the most like cultural power right now. It's so resonant because it just makes a lot of money. Everybody wants to like go to learn to code and work for Google and Uber and so on. That like it, there's so many things that can just like adopt that sheen and like get away with crap. And like Kickstarter is a place in a land where that kind of stuff lives.
Patreon is the real deal, folks.
Hell yeah.
They support creators. But no, I mean, like, we're making fun of it.
Yeah, like Amanda Palmer, right?
Number one Patreon.
Catching up. Watch your fucking tail, Amanda. You and your fucking husband, Neil Gamer.
I don't know. I haven't checked it recently. I wonder if we're beating the erotic video game Patreon.
I hope we are. I hope we're beating.
Weren't you beating like the number one podcast in Canada?
Yeah, fuck you, Canada.
Smoked their asses, Canada Land.
Fuck you. Get that oil price back up, bitch.
No, but like I said, we're making fun of it, but we're certainly a part of it. Like,
we really changed my life. Yeah, but
we've capitalized.
You actually. It's not like, hey, you know, it's a vibrating cock ring that like turns on your lights.
You mentioned that it's doing away with like the old kind of like labor of production and labor itself, and you mentioned the self-driving cars. Now I wanted to ask you about this. I saw you recently took a spin in a driverless car.
Yeah, I was in the driver's seat in a self-driving Uber.
Hello, I'm Johnny Cat. Where can I take you tonight?
Drive!
Would you please repeat the destination?
Oh, anywhere, just go! Go!
Please state a street and number.
Shit!
I'm not familiar with that address. Would you please repeat the destination?
So, like, wait, you're sitting in the, like, explain this to me. You're sitting in the driver's seat of a car, but, like, you're not working the pedals or steering wheel?
So you have to have your hands... So basically, like, the way regulators look at it is that they're like, well, this is just like glorified cruise control. So you have to just have your hands on the wheels at all times. So like, you keep them at 9 and 3.
Crucial.
Yeah.
This is seminal stuff here.
So yeah,
it's a self-driving car that you have to have your hand on the wheel of.
Yeah. But this is like the thing is that like you don't put your hand on it. You like hover over.
Hover hand.
Oh my god, the future is himself.
I'm not hover handing my own goddamn car. I do it enough with my wife.
You're hover handing a car and you get in an accident. It's like reverse J.G. Ballard.
Wow.
Literary reference.
Yeah.
Blow.
So you get in the car and like you start driving and like, and then a light will go on and say like, all right, you can activate the self-driving feature. And so there's like a little red switch. If you've ever played a Need for Speed video game or seen a Fast and the Furious movie,
yes,
you'll recognize this as the NOS button.
Fuck yes.
But in Uber, it's like it activates autonomous or something. They have like a name for it. I forgot, but you hit that button and then it turns it on and then you can put your hands back and you let it hover. But like the thing is that like the car is a better driver than, it's probably not better than Dale Earnhardt Jr. I don't know about the quality of NASCAR.
Is it a better driver than Tony Stewart?
It fucking better be a better driver than Dale. Like, or else
he said Junior.
Junior,
I said Junior, man.
Okay.
Is
it a better driver than Tony Stewart?
Or else Uber is going to be revolutionizing the way that we make pancakes.
So when you turn on the self driving feature, it's like it's a really good driver.
Yeah, I mean this is the thing about it. I would caution against thinking that like this is like fluffy bullshit. Like it's not.
This is going to happen in the next five.
At some point, you're going to be able to not have your fucking hand on the wheel.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right?
The goal is Uber does not want anybody. Like, think about it this way. When I ride in that car, or like when those rides, because so Uber has just launched its pilot program, and so they're picking up people within certain spots in Pittsburgh, and so they have like
where
a few
all the technology
drivers,
comes from.
They have
Pittsburgh.
A handful. Yeah, Pittsburgh, baby.
There is a lot of tech.
I was just in Pittsburgh. Yeah. I got to say, highly underrated city.
Oh, it's fantastic.
It's a great city.
Shout out to Johnny is good. Shout out to Jacob. Rock, Pittsburgh, represent.
Uber does not, like, ultimately, Travis Kalanick, he tweeted once that, like, he wants Uber's whole fleet to be self-driving by 2030. And so the idea is that, like, and Elon Musk, Tesla's talked about this, like, the sort of long-term vision that all these car guys have and car tech companies is that you, in the future, are just, like, you own a car, and that car makes money for you when you're not using it because this other service, it'll be like giving other people rides who need to access it. Like
I have a question.
Uber.
Okay, so I'm always like looking at the legal framework of things. I love legal frameworks, but
real framework hours.
Real framework hours, smash that motherfucking amicus brief button. So we talked about a movie last episode, and a crucial scene in the movie. T Terrence Howard was getting some motherfucking top while driving his car, and it enabled the cops to pull him over and be racist to him and his wife. In the future of self-driving cars, would it be a crime if your wife gives you top while you're, like, hover-handing your steering wheel?
This is a very important question.
This is really important.
I would probably... I mean, like, I hate to be a player hater. I hate to, like, you know, find cracks in racial science, but I gotta say it probably would be a crime.
Okay,
why?
So...
That's why? Stupid.
This is bullshit.
Why I mean, even I don't make the then? Laws. I'm just saying. I think it would be a crime.
What's even the fucking point of having these
things? Yeah, there's no point. Destroy this thing. So, wait a minute. I'm kind of confused about this. So, you're saying that... Because one thing that kind of puzzled me about Uber wanting to do self-driving cars is because I was like, well, their whole profit, you know... structure is involved around the fact they don't own any cars.
So this is
the people own the cars.
So, but the thing is that like owning a car and having people constantly go through it. Like Kalanick has kind of said this before. He said that like the perfect Uber like situation is like an endless ride. So imagine like a self-driving Uber picks you up, drops you off, and immediately goes to another ride, and it never has to stop, and it can drive for like 20 hours a day. And then for those final 4 hours, what does it do? It goes back to the Uber garage. And it charges because it's an all-electric vehicle because all the car companies kind of accept that, like, the arc of history is long and it bends toward, you know, like,
electric car.
Okay. And so...
Fiery death and destruction, actually, but whatever.
Yeah. So the, like in this case, like, that, like Tesla's vision is that you own the Tesla and other people, like, pay for it, which is, like, a weirdly have and have not kind of vision, but whatever.
Wait, so, like,
and then, like, Uber, though, think about it this way. Like... We went from, in music, for example, like, we used to download MP3s and shit. And so you used to, like, you whether you, like, torrented them or you bought them on iTunes, like, you owned a file, independent of whether or not there's, like, DRM or other software on there. You owned the thing. But now, like, the fastest growing way that people listen to music is they pay $10 a month to, like, have access to a library. So with Uber, the idea is that you would pay to have access
but
to an Uber.
But who actually buys the car?
Uber would, ultimately, in this case.
But see...
But Uber, that, like...
They don't have any money.
Yeah, but they, Uber, but they like, don't, keep they don't money? Have, but, like, what is more expensive? Seriously, what is more expensive? Having a car that you own and that, if it's electric, won't have crazy high maintenance costs like internal combustion engines and will just, like, go around constantly picking up people with rides and you can use a smaller number of them because they're much more efficient, or, like, splitting the fare with tons of drivers who are, like, a pain in the ass to deal with. Because they're labor, they're humans, flesh and blood, and why would you ever want to actually, you know, employ
that
people?
That does make all of their bullshit whenever they're wedging themselves Remora-like into a new market, talking about how in sanctimonious tones about how concerned they are for people to be able to make a living and how they're making it possible for people to make ends meet by being Uber drivers when secretly their entire fucking profile is to eventually fire them all.
Well, this is what's so crazy, because if you think about like a lot of these companies, like, and this isn't just Uber, like this is like what Silicon Valley, like I feel a little bit like I'm being very dark about this, but if you look at cities across the U.S., like whether you're in Tucson, Arizona, or Cleveland, or New York, like increasingly, like the software industry will come to your town. More and more people are going to work in it, and it's going to automate progressively more jobs. It's not just going to be like manufacturing kind of jobs. It's going to dramatically change like the way white collar industries work as well. And like we are totally unprepared for that reality, just for like mass labor displacement.
Well, I mean,
don't have
the
any
thing
answers.
Is, like, that is the Marxist dream. That's what's supposed to happen in Marxist teleology, is we get to a level of technological advancement that makes work basically unnecessary, and then we socialize the production of all of these machines. But we have private ownership of all these machines.
So
we have patents
like a really
held by all this technology.
There's a really kind of compelling argument about how, like, Uber and a lot of the competing ride-hailing companies are kind of like the early private subway companies in New York. And what ended up happening to the subways is like they got like they became public. So I think like it's there's like a really interesting argument about how like what Uber's ultimate goal is, their end game, like a lot of these other kinds of companies, like globally, is that they want to privatize mass transit. There's a really good Travis Kalanick op-ed from earlier this summer in which he talks about like the limits of mass transit. And I say good only because it's instructive to like what the company wants to do. It's like worth reading. And he makes this argument about how like, yeah, mass transit's inefficient, but like here is like what we're going to do. And he lays out this vision of like, imagine like a ride that never stops going and that you can like pick up, get in a car with other people, you pay a flat fee and it'll take you it'll take you much more quickly. It's kind of on demand. And it's like a pretty, like, it's kind of jarring to read it.
But where did you
Snowpiercer.
Yeah.
Where did you get the money to pay to take the ride, though? Like, how did you get the money to pay to ride around in the magic robot car?
Me?
No, I mean the person in this future.
Oh, yeah, no. I mean, that's... But this is, like, does... Like, companies don't answer... Like, this is the thing. Is like, no tech company is going to answer that question. And, you and like, I mean, for, like, kind of, like, obvious reasons. Like does like, Uber wants to... I mean, this is, by the way, like, there's some interesting, like, on like not, like, on the flip side, but, like, there's some recognition of this reality. It's, like, why Travis Kalanick, like, goes to bat for Obamacare. Because he recognizes that, like, if we're creating, like, a permaclass of people who do not have, like, an employer-provided insurance, then, like, where's that going to come from?
And, but how are they even going to fucking pay for that?
I mean, this is, again...
Obamacare, like, sucks.
Yeah, it's fucking awful. It's shit.
Like, so, but, like, again, this is, like, why we come to this place where this really kind of weird dystopian future where, like, more and more wealth than ever before is being generated, and the fruits of it are going to go to, like, an increasingly narrow slice
of
people.
Here's my vision.
It's going to go to people who give it to Elizabeth Holmes. Like, yeah, holy shit. Yeah. It's like Gabbo, but with blood. Jesus.
Here's my vision of a dystopian future based on what Noah was just telling me. Okay, I have my electric car. It's my electric car. I've paid for it, but I pay for it. I'm paying it off by the fact that when I get in the electric car, I go to work, I get out of the car just keeps going and picking up other people. Like you said, the ride never stops, but it's my car, and like they're just in there pissing and coming and just eating food and
so
fucking up all my shit.
So here's the best.
Smoking cigarettes. It's like taxi driver. He's like, at the end of the day, when my electric car came back to its pod, I had some nights I had to wipe the blood and come off the seats.
So here's the best part about the Uber I took a ride in.
The Uber is just like my record. It's clean.
I went in when I got in the self-driving Uber. There was like a little camera on the sunroof and. I looked at the camera and then I asked the engineer and the vehicle operator I was in the car with, and I was like, "What's that for?" And he's like, "Oh, it's just like so we can observe people who like get in the car, check out their behavior." and I was like, "So you notify people about this, right?" And they couldn't tell me at the time, but then I talked with a spokesperson later, and they're like, "Yes, we like tell people in the email that like they get recorded." But it made me think that like, oh, because like in this future where everyone's just like in this endless ride or whatever, what if someone just pukes? Because there's no self-cleaning car yet, so what happens, and I realized, oh, they're just going to film it, and then they're going to bill the person whoever took the ride, and you're still going to have to clean up their vomit.
And if you had sex in the car, they put it on their streaming porn site and charge people to watch that.
Yeah, I want to just be like, always working, I'm in the car, I'm camming, I'm at home, I'm camming, I just never want to stop camming. This is
cam boys.
Cam boys.
I'm camming here, I'm camming at the gym, I'm camming at my house, I'm camming at dinner, I'm camming.
Oh, man. The future is so bright, we got to wear shades.
Oh, I can't wait.
What do you say?
I can't wait.
You want to cap it off there?
Yeah,
I think so.
Let's do it.
But before we go, hold on. I have to go in another room to be racist, but someone is calling.
Oh, we got a call?
It's Elizabeth Holmes.
Oh, dear.
Wait a sec. We've been slandering her this entire episode, but maybe we should...
Hey, guys!
Elizabeth. Thanks for calling in.
You're welcome.
Elizabeth, I have the next best thing for you, and I'm wondering if maybe you would consider investing it. Let me ask you, are you familiar with stevia?
Oh, wow, yeah.
Do you know that stevia is going to revolutionize healthcare?
I know all about Maitreya.
Do you also know about the fountain, Elizabeth?
I know about the violin. I've heard it played on me several times. By Mad Dog Mattis.
Elizabeth.
Mad Dog Matt explains that violin like a champ.
Elizabeth, hold on. Actually, Elizabeth, now you're in the room with us. Do you mind if I perform the violin?
Go to town on my pussy. Triple digit orgasm. That was great.
Elizabeth, thank you for coming here and letting me perform the violin on you.
All right, I have to leave now.
Please invest in Chapo.
Our IPO's coming up. See you, everybody. You know us.
Later.
It was supposed to make the world safer.
With self-piloting airlines, we will eliminate all risk of terrorist hijackers.
But sometimes, people have other plans.
Now boarding flight 911.
Here's the chief programmer of the self-piloting airplane program. I can do anything.
Only one man.
Bin Laden! He put his personality on the thumb drive before he died! It's on the plane!
Can figure out how to stop it.
You're saying the programmer is in Al-Qaeda? And used Bin Laden's personality for the plane program?
I'm afraid so, sir.
Dad, to America!
This fall.
We have to get you on that plane with your hacking tools, Lieutenant Caliber!
Put on your seatbelt.
We've got an Eagle 380!
Put your tray table in the upright position. And pack your ammo.
Initiating program 9-11 2.0.
Killer app.
If there are any listeners who are Hollywood producers, hit us up in the DMs.
Yeah.
Let's get this made. And now we're now joined by our second guest, Ed Zitron. Ed, what's going on?
Nothing much, you know, just sitting here imagining planes controlled by USB drives, which have Osama bin Laden on it, the usual. I mean, it's usually what I get up to on my free time. It's wonderful to be here. I love Chapo Trap House. The last thing I heard before being violently slammed with another car.
Yeah, you got into an accident on the Bay Bridge listening to us, right?
Yeah, shortly after the discussion of the employment benefits plan for the Joker's employees.
Well, yeah, you're on the Bay Bridge, but you're also, you know, a Silicon Valley guy. That's why we're having you on the show. And yes. You're also, I gotta say, you're also the co-host of Felix's other podcast, the Scumbag Podcast, which yes. I gotta say, I wish you would stop doing. I'm worried about our beautiful boy Felix. I think he's overextended himself and needs to cut down on the number of podcasts he's hosting.
Well, he does around 417 a week. I don't know if I disagree, but the Scumbag is a good therapeutic exercise for him.
I'll tell you when I've had enough.
I can quit whenever I want.
Yeah.
The topic we were discussing on this week's show is tech and Silicon Valley. And what I want to do with you is I want to do a reading series with you.
Yes.
And we need your input on this this piece that was on the Daily Beast this week under the vertical of Politics 2.0. And this is sort of like a tech guy manifesto about how to, quote, disrupt the Democratic and Republican parties the way Uber has eviscerated the taxi business.
About goddamn time.
It's one of the most malformed pieces I've ever read.
I was hoping you could help us sort of translate into human a lot of what this guy's saying. But maybe for our listeners, could you give us an idea of what you do and your connection to the tech world?
So for about 8 years, I made yet another mistake in my life, and I became a technology publicist. And somehow along the way, my broken brain did not quite stay broken, so I stayed as a shithead on Twitter. Anyway, I help people get on the internet or whatever for money. It's good business. It allows me to hide from the world. And I do, but more importantly to the conversation, I do live in Oakland. I work in San Francisco. I've been around the valley for a while now, both living here and not living here. And I actually have to say this piece is amazing on so many levels in its myopia, but also its self-confusion. This is a guy having an identity crisis as you read it. And it's just amazing. It really is.
It's one of the maddest things I think I've ever read. And I think we just need to do it justice by just diving in. The title of the piece is, like I said, it says, the title is Time to Take a Silicon Valley Hammer to the Two-Party Duopoly. It's by a guy named Dave Manny. Have you been familiar with Dave Manny's work before this?
I remember reading one of his other shit pieces, and I love as well that he's not actually in... He's like the worst kind of Silicon Valley person in that he doesn't fucking live there. He lives in like Denver. And
yeah,
so,
no, I'm looking at his bio now, and it says, and Dave Manny writes about the information-driven economic revolution we're all living through and is founder and CEO of Colorado-based Deek Digital.
I am so fucking hard right now.
No, Ed, have you done any PR work on behalf of Deek Digital?
Well, they're a marketing firm, and if they called me, I'd definitely take the call, but I'd invite possibly everyone on this podcast onto it and claim you're all like my advisors.
No, I actually looked into Deek Digital. I'm on their website right now, and it says, we help clients create and distribute expert commentary for major media outlets. And now the other thing you notice immediately about Deek Digital is they have one of the worst logos I've ever seen for any what is ostensibly a tech or tech-related company. It's just sort of like these like plain blue letters that are dotted with red dots. And it just makes me think of like a tampon company or something like that.
Well, I'm a fucking idiot. So I sat down and I went, right, I'm going to find out why it's called Deek Digital. And it's something to do with hockey.
It's a sports term, yeah.
Sports. And like every fucking marketing person does sports analogies. It's like full court press. Like some sort of Rain Man like tick. Like definitely full court press. Definitely touchdown, Hail Mary. And so his logo, I think, is trying to be like a hockey puck going around an X. But his like
no, it looks like one of those things like when the TV commentators, they draw on the screen to like break down a football play. That's kind of what it looks like. But I guess it's a hockey term that he's going for.
I was more thinking it looks like one of those pharmaceutical commercials. So it's like the X is like when you take these three pills, the your cholesterol goes down. The cholesterol's the X.
The X is depression that follows you everywhere.
The X is your morals.
So this guy's job is to promote writing marketing, basically. But his way of marketing this article, I remember seeing this after it was put out, people went to his Twitter feed, is he literally just tweeted it, a link to it, to everyone on Earth, saying, if you've got a moment, check this out. If you've got some time, just check this out individually to like 50 different accounts. If people are paying him to do that on some grand scale, I think they're getting ripped off.
It's like paying a process server.
Yeah. I will go door to door and beg people to read your marketing material.
Well, Matt, I clicked the what we do on Deek Digital and it says, we follow a three-step formula to drive new client development and revenue growth for our clients. And it also says their clients, this is under the banner, who we serve, which I love it. It's like a Twilight Zone, to serve man. Except instead of to serve man, it's to serve the financial services and healthcare industries.
Yeah.
But their three-step formula is, step one, content strategy and facilitated content creation. Step two, content distribution and media placement. Step three, targeting and lead generation.
Fuck.
Ed, could you help translate this into human being for me?
Yeah, sure. All right, content strategy. What the fuck are you going to write? Facilitated content creation. Someone's got to fucking write it. Then content distribution. Put it somewhere. Media placement. Place it in the media. Targeting and lead generation. Unintelligible.
So yeah, no, he's connecting thought leaders with industry titans.
He is emailing someone saying what do you want to talk about? What'd you do? And then writing some fucking blog, and then he is emailing a contributing editor, which does exist. They exist all over the place, clearly a fucking Daily Beast. And
yeah, Daily Least is more like it.
Wow. And he's then I don't know, targeting and lead generation? What? Like, I'm reading this page, and all it says is just, it takes significant effort and expertise to get the most out of great content our clients create. And it's one of the things we bring to the table. We're good at helping our clients activate their content, and that's in quotation marks.
Activate their content!
I don't know what this
means.
I
gotta get my content activated at least twice a week or I can't sleep.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really know. Like, oh, wait, sorry, there's bullet points. Generate leads. Okay, what? It's just get leads. Just what leads? I don't know. No need to be specific.
These are the leads. These are the deep digital leads. To you, these leads are gold, and you don't get them. Why? Because you're not disrupting enough.
Put that fucking Soylent down. Soylent is for closers.
A, you B, go. D, always be disrupting.
Reinvigorate existing referral networks. So call your exes.
They don't have any fucking money. They just like talking to angel investors.
But wait, well, it's just there's like five more bullet points, and if I try and read them, I think I'll die.
Jesus Christ.
But there's a great one that makes literally no sense, though. Increase website SEO performance. Like, that has nothing to fucking do with any of
the
other
shit. Well, no, you add, like, Jessica Biel topless to all of the content. That's what you do. Nip slip gallery is every third word in the article. That'll maximize your SEO.
I'm about to say that I'm going to get technical, but any normal fucking person can understand this. You're increasing your website's SEO performance by putting your content on someone else's website. That's not how it fucking works. That's like having someone else fuck your wife and saying you did.
Yeah, and? Being judgmental much? It's called polyamory, okay? It's a valid lifestyle choice.
That's it. You're pro cuck on the Chapo Trap House.
No, but that's it. Content marketing is actually just poly. It all comes back. It's full circle. It's like a stanza. It rhymes.
I like where this guy's coming from now. I'm rethinking it.
Well, I want to know who...
Cuck digital.
It's an X in the center and then two arrows pointing at it from opposite directions is the logo for that.
Yeah, actually the red dots are three separate dudes and the X is your wife.
let's get into it. This is Dave Manny on how Silicon Valley is gonna disrupt democracy.
Yeah.
He begins, this year settles it. The two-party system in American politics is ripe for radical, burn-it-down, internet-fueled disruption.
He's the goddamn Joker!
The two parties might have been towering sequoias of the U.S. political system, but now they stand dead and hollow. Yeah, no, this is a Northern California reference, right?
No, it's definitely a reference to, it's like, Sequoia Capital is a VC. That's definitely what he was thinking. He doesn't know what a fucking sequoia tree is. He does. Like, I know what they are, but he definitely doesn't.
He's just thinking of a tree. Yeah.
Oh yeah. He probably like Googled what does sequoia mean. It's a tree.
It's a towering tree that stands dead and hollow and ready to have one of our self-piloted airplanes fly into it.
Which again is a misunderstanding of a fucking sequoia tree. When they stand dead and hollow, they still can grow back based on the burrs. So technically,
yeah. No. A sequoia cannot be hollow. It wouldn't be a towering if it was hollow on the inside.
Yeah,
this metaphor is fucking stupid.
Oh, my head.
He continues, the 2016 presidential nominating process has been like one of those disastrous alpine blowdowns, a freak storm that leaves millions of trees worth of tinder dry kindling wood on the forest floor, just waiting for a hot, dry wind and spark. Again, I don't know what he's like. What is... I can't follow this.
Are there a lot of ski areas by the redwoods?
Where you find sequoias is not a place that snows.
Yeah, no. There are no snow-capped mountains next to sequoia trees.
This is like when Carl Digler is like, the candidates need to get on Tinder.
He goes, as we watch these two horribly flawed and widely reviled candidates bumble down the final 90 days of their scandal and gaffe-strewn runways, millions of us are asking each other two questions. is this the best American can do? And who's got a match? Again, like, the mixed metaphors going on here rivals Thomas Friedman. And he's saying gas through runways.
We want to set fire to the runway.
Yeah. Like, Die Hard too. But, Ed, runways, that's like a VC term, right?
Yeah. Like, it's just like, I guess... I don't really, like, that specific paragraph of, like, with tinned dry kindling wood and all that shit, this is just, it's a 13-year-old style writing thing. It's just, shit, I need to, like, some fucking metaphors. Oh, wait, it's a simile. He said, like, fuck.
Right.
And he's, like, sitting there just throwing, he's like, I said Sequoia, I need to put some wood in, forest shit. He's like
forest fire.
It's great though, because it is exactly like, because on a wider level, Silicon Valley having content and this need to create content for no goddamn reason, they think they have to, so they do it. They do this, and a lot of them have had to learn to write. Now, I'm not saying they succeeded, but they've had to, like, they'd be like, oh, I better write something. How do people write? Shit. Simile, okay. What's tall? Trees. And you can hear and almost feel the gears turning in this guy's head. Like, how do I do this? Oh, God.
Well, the subhead of the next section is called Fuel the Burn, which is a nice little play on a well-known phrase that we all are familiar with. But he goes,
On a well-known political candidate he does not mention in the piece.
He says, but how? How do you burn down a system with a 160-year stranglehold on our body politic? I believe it's time to adopt the approach of America's favorite societal pyromaniacs, the technologists and venture investors of Silicon Valley. Okay, he says America's favorite pyromaniacs. I like that he's just assuming that everyone loves these people.
And it's that, like, there is such a thing as your favorite pyromaniac. Oh, that, yeah, Steve, he burns down vacant buildings in the neighborhood. We all love him. He's awesome. Pyromania is generally considered a negative trait in a person.
It's part of the dark triad.
America's favorite cat torturers.
Manny continues. He says, we need to take their strategies and tactics for disrupting and dismantling ossified industries and put them to work to eviscerate the two-party system. In dead right. earnestness.
Oh, my God.
Excuse me, that's John Oliver's job. Don't take him as the eviscerator in this political system. Thank you very much.
Let me just finish this paragraph. He says, in dead earnestness, it's time for a party in the cloud.
That's my favorite. That's my favorite Billy Ocean song from the 1980s, the Party in the Cloud.
A party in the cloud. A citizen's political party as a service. A 21st century fast, agile digital movement built on the foundation of a powerful social web organization and communication platform. Not a party of insiders or elites, a party that lets the idiot fringe be the idiot fringe from both left and right, and instead seeks to serve the citizens in the middle. In fact, let's just call it the Citizens Party.
Citizens United, so. I would call it.
Well, I think that there's a number of things to say about this, such as that he says, not a party of insiders or elites, and we'll get to how shitty that is as a statement within this piece anyway, and then immediately goes on to make one of the most fucking elitist statements possible,
yeah, calling
idiot fringes anyone who are not dead set fucking in the middle.
And he said, not a party of elites or insiders, but this is the next paragraph. As venture capitalist Hank Vigil of Seattle-based Acquia Ventures, do you know that,
Five
Ed?
Aces.
Acquia Ventures.
Five Aces Ventures. I'm not familiar.
Okay, yeah, Five Aces. Acequia. Oh, okay, I got it. Hank Vigil, not an insider, he said after a
but
long...
But he does sound like a porn star. Yeah. Hank Vigil.
Hank Vigil. It's what he said to me after a long discussion where I first broached the subject to him.
Please never call me again.
I think what you're talking about is creating some kind of technological infrastructure that forms a kernel capable of attracting talent to create the swarm dynamics that overwhelm the traditional model. Yes, Hank, yes, that is exactly what I'm talking about.
Swarm Dynamics in the house, y'all!
What the fuck is our Swarm Dynamics?
Real Swarm Dynamics!
Nothing. It's not a phrase that anyone uses.
When he says, Swarm Dynamics, that's a phrase nobody in politics has ever said.
Yeah, no, yeah. It's also like, they've also never said Spoon Monday, Moon Door, House Hat, like other terms that you would say if you had a stroke. I taste and smell burning hair. Is that my daughter or my grandmother? I'm a little boy again. You know, just like normal things you say when you have LSD poisoning.
Yeah. Swarm dynamics is what allows drones to gather together to batter down state and federal election law barriers to entry and bring candidates and policies to the fore that actually represent mainstream American thinking, and burn those two big old dead trees right down to their jet black stumps in plenty of time for November 2020. He's back to the forest fire thing. He's going to use drone swarms to cause a massive forest fire.
And again, sequoias have fire-resistant bark.
Let's burn down a tree that's been around since the Parthenon was created in the name
Fuck
of...
Fuck that tree! Also, the idea that they will be replaced by a single party, which, that's the hallmark of democracy that we all know and love. The one-party state.
A single party run and created by a guy who lives in Denver who went to Stanford Business School. Yep, all of us covered.
I can't wait until all of the federal budget goes into the next Theranos. Like, this is like the next one-party system. Like, they'll be like, all right, we're investing $3 trillion in this thing that takes a picture of your asshole and tells you if you have cancer.
Okay, I'm skipping a little bit because this is a fucking such a long piece. It's insanely long, but I like this line. He says, "I want those of us who find the Byzantine arcane presidential caucus primary delegate nomination system to be mindlessly archaic and broken to go out and do something about it. Something big and muscular and bristling
and fat,
with healthy
fat and girthy.
Something that something that reminds me of my wife's chiropractor.
Something big and muscular with a healthy preference, glistening. A healthy preference for economic prosperity throbbing. And innovation, and a tolerance for a sense of shared purpose and destiny."
A single party dedicated to a shared purpose and destiny. This sounds democratic as fuck.
I find archaic, I hate like lining up and just like, you know, expressing my preference for like one of a variety of candidates, and I have to choose one that's best for me.
Oh my God.
And like the parties nominate like these candidates, and it's just like, oh, it's so archaic. Oh. I know. Why can't something do something better than
Why can't
this?
I just turn my TV on and there's an asshole in a turtleneck saying, I'm your new god?
I want to...
That's incredibly streamlined.
I want to go back to when this guy says, the Democratic and Republican Party don't represent the mainstream. You know what does, though? Like Benedict Evans. Everyone's like Benedict Evans. They're all like just complaining about seeing homeless people in the carpet store. They're inside for 100 hours a week. That's the normal person, is like a sexually repressed psycho who shits his pants when he sees homeless people.
Well, we've seen, I mean, in the other parts of the article that we're probably not going to get into, he makes very clear that his conception of what that 60% majority opinion is good old-fashioned, fiscally conservative, socially liberal. Like, that's what he wants.
That is what both parties absolutely represent.
Well, beyond that, is that is actually incredibly unpopular. Nobody believes... That's basically libertarianism, and libertarianism is intensely unpopular in the United States.
Yeah, people
don't want to give up either their racism on one side and like their obsession with race and class and especially gender hierarchies, and other people do not want to give control of the economy over to billionaires and plutocrats, and that's just, and people have combinations of those beliefs, but like the one where you strain out all the racism and sexism and homophobia and you strain out any kind of populism, that's 16 dickheads living in Silicon Valley and working at the Cato Institute. That is not 60% of the United States population.
We have the two most unpopular presidential candidates in modern history, just the two shittiest candidates that if like both of them got lost at sea tomorrow, like, people would be ecstatic. And Gary Johnson cannot even sniff, like, 12%. And he's not even going to sniff, like, 6% come election day. Because no one believes in this. This ideology that has billions of dollars dedicated to just promoting it. And no one even likes this guy enough to get this fucking asshole on TV in a debate for Hillary to cough and Donald Trump to call her some type of racial slur.
And if you do want a softer version of what he's describing, where you're in favor of business and you want few regulations and you want growth and you focus on growth, but you don't like racism and you don't like sexism, guess what? That's the Democratic Party.
Here's another really good line that I liked. He says, 21st century America is a place where consumer things increasingly just work.
Oh, yes. Oh, I really wanted to talk about this. Like the Samsung Galaxy Note 7 that explodes.
I mean, he says, and any physical good that exists can be on our front porches 48 hours from now. Unimaginable entertainment and social options are available to us anywhere, anytime, with a few taps of the magic screens in our pockets. Mm-hmm. Now, this is similar to what Noah said to us in our first interview about how Silicon Valley is about sort of creating solutions to problems nobody knew they had. And to a certain degree, that's true. It's made everything kind of convenient and entertainment, to an extent, and consumer things. I suppose it's easier. The problem with America and politics is that everything outside of it doesn't, like, outside the consumer sphere of, like, getting shit delivered to you or watching things on TV doesn't work. Like, healthcare or infrastructure.
Yeah, and that's what he's
going to
fix.
No, but guys,
with his fascism app.
What's great, though, is the fact that he focused on education and healthcare and Silicon Valley is actually the funniest fucking part of this article. Because of the two industries that tech has failed the most, they are the ones. There is one disruptive, quote-unquote, which just means fucking startup, health insurance company. It's called Oscar Health, and they're struggling to stay alive. They are dying.
I see their
hands. Hold on. Oscar, I applied to work part-time at Oscar Health last summer when I had no money and I lived on a racist woman's cot. They made me do a three-hour interview for a part-time position, and they never fucking called me back. Fuck them. I hope they suffer.
but they're dying because, surprisingly enough,
good.
You can't just get a bunch of well-meaning 22-year-olds to try and do a fucking health insurance company. And then education, every single initiative involving digital education has been, well, okay, every single, I'm sure there's one that succeeded somewhere. Udacity, fucking failure. I think it was either Udacity or Udemy that had a massive failure with the San Jose algebra course. Just complete failure across the board. Digital education within classrooms is a complete fucking mess.
There's an increasing amount of actual research showing that giving kids like tablets and screens to learn on is actually extremely detrimental to education and learning and in the traditional sense.
And let's not forget the $100 million that Mark Zuckerberg gave to, I believe, the New York School District.
Yeah, yeah.
That completely went fucking nowhere.
They're solved now. What are your problem? What are you talking about?
Newark, 100% across the board, right?
Yeah. All those kids are in their like second series of funding for their app. They're doing great.
Yeah, a fuckload.
But the thing is, like, he wants to, well, we need to apply the disruptive power of Silicon Valley to politics, but the thing that, and he keeps
he
mentioning,
calls, by the way, he calls politics a consumer market.
It's not. Just like healthcare isn't. There are things that are not consumer markets, and that's what they can't get their minds around. But even in areas where they are consumer markets, and he keeps going back to Airbnb and Uber and comparing their fight to, like, the Citizens Party's fight against archaic party nominations and ballot access. They're fucking parasites. They launch themselves remora-like onto existing structures and suck the fucking money out of them. They cannot replace the structures. They can only exist by interposing themselves within a given system. The idea that they could replace the system is absurd. There's nothing there. There's nothing in within them that can allow them to actually replace these things when all they do is just parasitically suck off of them.
And what's amazing as well is that both of those companies you've named, Uber especially, have done everything they can to, and by the way, he's criticizing the political system that uses a great deal of money to influence people, right? Just so we're clear, to change things for their benefit. That's exactly what Uber has done. Uber literally brought in one guy to just shove around the insurance industry so it was more convenient for them to fuck over their drivers. They have used shit tons of money to stop categorizing their drivers as employees so they don't have to pay. Like, they are just as bad as the system he claims that they should be replacing.
What's the Citizens Party's answer to, say, a bunch of out-of-work taxi drivers, doing a demonstration?
Spit on them.
Is it, drone-operated pacification units? I mean, it sure as hell isn't anything that's going to respond to their issues, because what would that require? It would require the kind of things that aren't nimble and supple, like, say, government-sponsored employment or things like that. Like,
deep learning.
That's not supple. That's not agile. Fuck that shit.
Now, I think we should get into his solutions. There's a subhead that says, but how? And he says, I'm not suggesting somehow that Silicon Valley can save our political system. I've just spent the last 3,000 words saying exactly that. Let's get into his, he has a numbered list of, how it would work. He says, if I were to give you my outside observer's take on the algorithm for building a revolutionary and disruptive organizations from scratch,
that's not what an algorithm is. They're automated.
These are his 10 core elements to creating a revolutionary movement. This is Mao or Pol Pot right here.
This is like the 10 crack commandments made by a guy who calls the police and his mom every time that he sees a homeless person.
Yeah.
Brendan, can we get a little, drop that primo beat on the 10 crack commandments and let's go into it now. Number one. Start with knowledge of the full technological stack, the available toolkit, and what existing participants in the marketplace are doing with it already. He says, "You come to the fight armed and aware, and the political market hasn't yet been disrupted, not in the Valley sense. It's been co-opted by some ill-intentioned mountebanks, but it hasn't been disrupted." Okay, crack commandment number two. Identify high-energy, high-achieving, highly intelligent, aggressive, inquisitive, and hardworking individuals and organize them into two or three or person insurgent teams. These are your, vanguard.
Yeah, this is, from Mao's Little Red Book, right?
Yeah.
Hold up a second. Not to poke holes in this argument, but isn't that describing, the street teams of people that go around for political candidates talking to people and saying, they should vote for them, which have existed for many years?
No, he's talking about the founding team.
Oh, cool. So how many of these fucking 2 to 3 person insurgent cells? So terrorists, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, they're disrupting democracy. They're insurgent
democracy
cells.
Democracy terrorists. No big deal.
That are terrorizing our corrupt, ossified democratic system. Okay.
Yeah.
Crack commandment number three. Encourage these teams to identify huge commercial and social centers and target them for disruption. No, I'm changing that. But he says, identify huge commercial and societal problems and dysfunctions and seek out and break down the root causes of said dysfunctions. Mm-hmm. This is where it gets really weird, because he's saying, get your 2 or 3 man insurgent teams and send them to major population centers and identify choke points that can be disrupted. Number four, pool capital to back the teams to identify and create small technologically driven demonstration footholds while identifying plausible product and service roadmaps for the climb ahead. Don't know. I'm just going to keep going. Number five, attack the climb. Test the footholds and either keep climbing or pivot in search of better footholds. Is he back to a tree again? I don't know.
The thing that stuck out to me in that whole fucking shit slurry was acquire the capital. Oh, it seems like that's that you're like assuming where the who's paying for this and why would they want to do it? Like the idea that this whole thing is going to be powered by people who are purely altruistic, who just really want to see an Airbnb in the Senate. I mean,
yeah,
that's not how this works. People contribute to politics because they have a vested interest.
No, Matt, you identify the most aggressive and altruistic people you can find and set
that's
them loose.
Those monks. Traits go together a lot of the time. It's very common.
Number six.
Warrior monks. It's the answer.
When successful approaches become apparent, slam the accelerator to the floor and aggressively pour human, financial, and technological resources at the opening.
So you slam that so you hole. Slam, you hit the gas on the pouring machine.
Number seven.
Yes.
Reach for alliances, partnerships, expertise, and more capital to build scale more, quickly.
There's that capital again. Just show it up. Yeah. Thanks, capital. Wow, it's not like you were accumulated using, you know, exploitation and by capitalists with vested interests in maintaining the ability to continue exploiting.
Number eight, provide real value to build a community of fervent followers and foster the virality of your offerings.
What?
Agreed. Pure gibberish. Just pure what? Gibberish.
Virality you're already in America.
Virality of your offerings.
I think it's good that they let somebody recovering from a concussive injury write a column. Like, I think this is a good physical therapy exercise.
Are we pretty sure these aren't, like, the dying words of Dutch Schultz?
Number nine. Use scale, momentum, and community to batter down barriers to entry and regulatory doors.
What?
Doors are usually made out of wood that comes from sequoias that are dead and hollow. Set them on fire.
Burn down the doors.
Light the forest on fire. Give your chocolates to your children. Lock the doors. Pull up the zippers. Wipe around the windows. Paint the D for disruption on your door. Everything's fine. I smell burning hair.
This is the last one. Number 10. Oh, I like this one. Number 10, fail fast, intensively collect data on what works and doesn't, and iterate to magnify success.
Who wrote this, Martin O'Malley?
Iterate. Okay. Hope everyone enjoyed that reading from Mein Kampf. Find a community, isolate the community, and then export.
Put the community in a camp. Analyze the community for the best people, let them live.
the eternal wandering regulator puts his tentacles all over the world. He is responsible for all the troubles in my life and his paganistic rituals where he takes blood from innovator children and stabbed us in the back before our world historical victory against the forces of Western Europe. He will be burned down like the door that he presents.
There's just one more clip from this, and believe it or not, this goes on forever after he identifies all this shit. There's two things I want to talk about. He talks about what are some potential problems to this vision. Oh. What is going to get in the way? And one of the things he says is, where is it? Fundraising. And he says, no illusions, money makes the political go round in exactly the same way it does the business world.
Wait, what?
Star fundraisers in a new technologically centered party architecture might look exactly like they do in the duopoly.
Huh.
Or they might look more like YouTube or Twitter stars, individuals whose content or analysis or informed commentary make them emerging authorities on emerging candidates.
So, like, Nash Greer is going to back this thing? Is that the idea?
Jacob Sartorius
is going to, like, He's going to get done setting his pubes on fire for a vine, and then he's going to cut a check to these guys?
Jacob Sartorius.
Our next president.
Jacob Sartorius is like, hey, guys. Hey, YouTubers. I just want to say I love all of you, but what I really hate is our corrupt, ossified political system. Let's get out there and iterate.
All right. It's motherfucking disruption time. So I've got my fucking iterations right here. And what a lot of people don't understand about motherfucking iterations is that you have to keep doing them. Our political system right now is like doing a set with improper form. You are just wasting energy. You're not getting any motherfucking bigger, and you are not confusing the fucking body.
All right. Here's the White House's fridge. I never fucking use it.
The new White House will have carpeting everywhere. Carpeting everywhere. Yeah.
Our national motto will become life must goon.
Sorry, this is the last thing I want to read from, like I said, Mein Kampf 2.0. But he said, this is in the possible problems that this new vision will encounter. And it just says legal. And he says, no illusions here either. If you think Uber or Napster or 23andMe have faced huge legal and regulatory obstacles, you ain't seen nothing yet.
Napster, by the way, was shut the fuck down.
They faced legal hurdles, okay?
He says, the Citizens Party will need the same hardball mobilization and legal skills demonstrated by the likes of Uber to get its users to help overturn the duopoly's barricades.
So a sort of a putscht, if you will, group of motivated people who are willing to stand in front of the organs of state and overthrow them.
Imagine Saddam Hussein at the Ba'ath Party meeting. And he's like, he takes all the people out of the audience and he goes, you are all going to enact regulations that prevent disruption. To prove that you're loyal to the disruption agenda, I want you to get in the self-driving Uber and collide it in to the traitor I've identified.
Well, I mean, there does seem to be a place for the citizen, but it really seems to be just a updated high-tech version of like the plebiscite that ratified the seizure of power of Louis Napoleon or something. It's like, you know, every couple of months a blinking light will come on your Apple TV and it'll be like, the government has proposed allowing, you know, free marketed human organs. Click yes or no, and then that's your input.
It's just a mess, and he describes the technology in it, and it doesn't even... this man's understand. He says cloud computing and software as a service references are just technology model starting points. There's no illusion that a group of coders are going to stand up as a political party. But if we're designing a 21st century political organization around 21st century technologies in order to dominate a 21st century landscape, Jesus Christ, it's quite likely that what we create will have its foundation in sophisticated digital platform. In a sophisticated... So what he's saying is a website. We need a website.
Holy shit, why haven't we fucking thought of that?
Oh, man. I think Ed is right. It's just another way of making money. It's just capitalism, and you should always be wary.
Bunch of assholes.
When capitalists begin to believe that they are, you know, artists or visionaries in any way.
Frankly, I'd prefer it if they just did coke and went to strip clubs like the assholes on Wall Street.
Yeah, Jesus.
I seriously would too. And Felix and I have discussed this before, but people out here don't seem to know how to like enjoy wealth. They don't spend money on like the... And yeah, the crazy opulent shit is disgusting, but I'd respect it more if these people went out and like just had these crazy coke parties and like bought boats made of gold that couldn't actually sail. I'd respect that more than the people who are like, oh, you know, I'm just changing the world. I need to change the world. And it's, I don't mean the people who are like donate money to charity, like all both of them. It's the people who just, they talk about like the world of startups, like they're saving someone's life when really they're more likely leading to someone's suicide. It's fucking sad.
Oh, okay. I think we should probably wrap it up there for this week. we've put a bow on Silicon Valley. It's over.
I think, yeah, they're done for. Yeah.
No more That's Silicon it. Valley.
We ended Slow racism down. In Silicon Valley. It's amazing.
We need a minute. And what we need a minute for is to prepare for our live show.
Motherfucking live show!
Saturday, the 24th. Motherfucking live show at Genius Headquarters. Chapo, Digcast, live. Check our accounts. Tickets still available, but they are going fast. Please, if you're in the New York City area, come out and see us on next Saturday night, the 24th. And I don't want to make an official announcement. We have, we're working on another plan for another live show, something to do with the debates, very soon after that. So stay tuned for more Chapo live news. Till Ed, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Matt, Felix, till next time.
Peace.
Bye-bye.
Remember back in the days when niggas had waves, gazelle shades and corn braids, pitching pennies, honeys had the high top jellies, shooting skelly, motherfuckers was all friendly, lounging at the barbecues, drinking brews with the neighborhood crew.
To all my weed smoking fans out there who don't have a lot of money and want to save as much of what they got as possible, what I do is I get my weed after I buy it, and it's usually bone dry because that's honest. You're not buying water weight. And then I put a little orange peel in there or something, you know, get a little moist so it's not going to, you know, just burn up. And I roll it up into a little ball and like this, starting to come apart, and voila. And I load it. And so we're going to do a little test. See how many hits Dan Quinn can get off this, all right, compared to what you guys are doing, you know? That's one. Damn. That's one, baby. And you know, I'm going to go for a lot more than that.